Okay, so this is the official slide presentation for the very first part of our insulin resistant solution practitioner training. The first part is where we're going to go over some of the logistics and some of the chemistry and the science behind what insulin resistance is all about, how you can explain that to your clients, what the dangers are, and how you can get people without going into fear tactics, how you can allow them to understand the importance of working with you and getting this problem resolved. As always, at the beginning of any presentation, and I recommend that you do this as well when you're working with people. If you're working with people one-on-one, the way you could do it is have something that they sign that says that they're aware that you're not diagnosing anything, that this what you're sharing is education and coaching to help them improve their lifestyle. And that's me to you. I'm not giving you medical advice. I'm just giving you an understanding from my experience, my research, and everybody that I've consulted to get this information. I share with you my references and my resources, and there'll be some new documents even after this that I'm going to load up that I've been working on that have just lots and lots of resources so that if you want to do further research on your own, you can. Always encourage people that they need to make their own healthcare decisions based upon their own research and in partnership with a qualified professional. And especially if anyone is on medication, blood glucose lowering or blood pressure, especially with this particular topic, that the need for that medication may change. And it may change dramatically and it may change very quickly. So work in partnership with a qualified professional. So when we talk about working with people, with our clients, with the people who come to us for advice, for lifestyle advice, for nutrition advice, for help with specific problems, the areas that we're going to work on balancing for them are their blood sugar, adrenals, digestion, the detox pathways, the immune system, other hormones like thyroid, female hormones, male hormones, and some of the lesser known hormones which come up, and then brain chemistry. And so today, this whole course is geared towards the very first one on the list, which is blood sugar. And I'm going to get my pointer so I can write if I need to. All right, so today we're focusing on blood sugar. And the agenda for today, at first, is the very beginning, connection. I want to connect with you guys. I'm going to ask one or two of you to share a little bit about who you are, why you're here, just one or two, there's not time for everyone. And then at the end of the presentation, we're gonna break up into small groups where you'll be given an assignment to do together and also breaking out in order to share with each other who you are, where you're from, what some of your goals are, so that you feel connected to the rest of the group. It really helps to feel connected with, and we'll talk about that when we get into the connection with your clients, is how making that connection and having them feel like you're there for them and you care. It makes a huge difference in their therapeutic outcome. We're going to first talk about the blood sugar metabolism details. A lot of this is a repeat of what we've learned in the Before Be Gone program, maybe going into reviewing some of it, going into a little bit more depth on other places, but always bringing into play how are you taking this information and sharing it with the people that you're working with. Then we're going to go into home blood glucose testing, some of the little things you need to know when you're teaching other people how to do that, and knowing how much information to give, teaching them how to track what they're doing, because tracking is cornerstone to the success in any program where we're balancing blood sugar. Super important. Then we're going to break off for lunch. I'm going to give you an assignment to do over lunch. I will leave the phone lines open and you're welcome to, and I'll actually keep you in your groups as you were before, the breakout groups. So if you want to work with your same partner, then you can do that over lunch. You can just plan that before we go. If not, you can do on your own and I'll give you some things that I really would like you to work on and think about before we get back. After lunch, we're going to go through the labs, all of the different labs that are associated with insulin resistance, how you can help people order those, resources for you to, without having to be a licensed healthcare professional like a doctor, a naturopath, or a chiropractor, osteopath, you can order tests, and I'll share with you how to do that, and then which ones, what they mean, really, and what labs are possible, or what you're going to see with somebody who's normal, with somebody who is insulin resistant, and I'll differentiate between early insulin resistance and later insulin resistance, then the latest stage of insulin resistance, which is called metabolic syndrome, different labs show up there, and then diabetes. And kind of to see where your person is and whether they've crossed the line into the next level of severity. Then we're going to get into designing your own insulin resistance program. I want you to be able to walk away, if not at the end of today, at least by the end of this program, with on paper what it is that you're going to have to offer. And however it is that you attract clients right now, you're going to be able to share with them in that conversation the program that you've designed, what it entails, what the benefits are to them, what it costs, how long you'll be working together, what to expect, and have the language you need to be able to engage them in doing that program. Now, the whole process of enrollment is something, you know, different, and you can study that. I've actually taken multi-week courses in how to use that and how to really get out of our way, because we tend to be, as practitioners, oh, you know what, I don't know if I should be charging people, and I feel uncomfortable asking them for money to do the services. And when you can get that stuff out of the way and realize you are doing them a disservice by not offering them what you know they need. If when somebody comes to you and you see, oh my gosh, this person really clearly has insulin resistance going on and I can help them, if you don't offer the program you've put together because you're afraid they can't afford it, or you just don't want to go that way, you just want to let them just, okay, come back next week or come back in 2 weeks and just charge them as they go along, you're doing them a disservice. And I'll share with you during the design how you're doing them a disservice. My experience with that and how I've gotten over that and really seen the transformations just skyrocket as a result. We'll have a small segment on motivating and inspiring your clients to success, which I know a lot of you are really good at already. You've been doing coaching or been a practitioner for a long time. And then finally, we'll open it up for Q&A. It's scheduled to be going until 5 o'clock Central, which is 3 o'clock on the West Coast and 6 o'clock on the East Coast. I'm willing to stay up to an extra hour to answer whatever questions come up. For those of you who have scheduled it that you can only stay till 5, all the content will be completed by 5. And if you miss the Q&A, it will be loaded up as a separate little recording so that you can just come in and listen to what you missed. You don't have to listen to the whole 6 hours before that. As we go through and later in the course, I will share with you how I've got a whole year-long program designed for practitioners to help you get really confident in interacting with people and with your clinical skills as well. So that's great. So take a long, slow, deep breath from your abdomen. Those of you who are yoga instructors and meditation instructors know this well. Just let yourself feel into it. Take some deep breaths, filling up your abdomen completely. Pretending that the air is coming in and out through your heart and allowing you to connect deeply with your heart, the center of your emotion, or the center of your caring. And I will say to you that more important than all the stuff I'm going to teach you for the rest of the day and all the stuff that I can teach you over the course of a year is that you connect. You can have an amazing breadth of knowledge, but if you're not connecting with people, you're not going to impact them. No matter how good your program is, no matter how good it is, if you're not connecting, if you're not reaching out, even if it's across the miles, and just loving everyone you're dealing with, and so deeply feeling invested that they get the best outcome, your programs aren't going to work, even if they're the same protocols. The same protocols. So you have to start with that place of love and connection and care and compassion. And I don't think there's any shortage of that here. From what I know about all of you that I know so far, I don't think there's any shortage of that. But stay connected with it. Because sometimes when we get into teaching people and coaching people and we want so much to do it right, we can lose that sense of connecting. So stay with that. And right now I want you to breathe in that love, that feeling, that connection. And as you do that, I want you to just envision all these people that you're helping with this knowledge that you've been gleaning over the last month or so, plus what you'll pull together today. And you're seeing profound changes. And people are coming back and telling you how you changed their life and thanking you. And breathe that in and allow every pore in your body to feel that sense of exhilaration, that sense of joy, that sense of pride, but also humbleness, that it really wasn't you who did it. You just unlock the door for people. That's what it's all about. We're helping people to unlock the doors and tuning into what they need the most at any point in time, so that you can unlock the door and free them from the misery, from the pain, from the discomfort that they're currently living in. And take some breaths and really feel that. And allow that to permeate through your body. I have a tingling going on in my body as I do that. And I can't help but be at the beach as I do that, because when I do this process, my new body naturally takes me there because I've practiced it so much. So I'm sitting on the beach, stepping into the water, surrounding myself with the water that comforts me, and just feeling so exhilarated by the impact, the changes that we're making one person at a time. And if you're working with people one person at a time, and you aspire to do more in terms of classes or group programs or even large group programs on the internet like I'm doing now, know that that will come, but you have to do it one person at a time first. I spent 17 years doing it one person at a time before I felt I had the courage, the knowledge, the skill to reach more people. And I'm still learning in that arena, and I'm happy to share that. So when you're ready, take one more really nice cleansing breath and open up your mind. Open up your heart to what we're going to share today. If you're hearing things for the second or third time, you may be tempted to say or think, "I already knew that." And when you do that, you're closing off your learning. Keep an open mind. Keep an open heart. And you'll be open to hearing perhaps one magical phrase, one distinction that changes it all for you and skyrockets you ahead. So yes, there will be some review, and for some of you it'll be a welcome review because there's a lot of information, and for some of you it might be tempted to say, well, okay, get to the point, I already knew that. But just stay with it. There's a method to my madness. So we're going to move this partner share and connection to the end, just so that we optimize our time and we'll have everybody switch. But for now, what I would like you to do, I want you to get two people, either on the web or on the phone, to raise your hand. Raise your hand with a one if you'd like to share your name, where you're from, and the answers to these questions, basically. What do you value most in your life? What are you willing to take a stand for? What are you planning to do with the knowledge gained from this program? And how do you envision your health practice a year from now? So if you're willing to share, raise your hand with a number one. So I'm going to start with Tammy. Tammy, you should be audible now.
Okay.
Oh, good. Yes. Okay, so give us your name, where you're from to start, and then you can just go through the answers to the rest of the questions. Thank you.
Okay. Tammy Anna Klein, and I am in New Jersey. I am a chiropractor. However, I've been practicing for the last 4 years now. That's the one thing that I value most in life. the most obvious for me would be my children, my family, but the next is really my health. And I really, really want to bring that to other people. So there's so, I feel so strongly about what's happening here in the United States with how the pharmaceutical companies and how companies like Monsanto, who can't even get seeds that they've not used for. I work with a number of farmers in South Jersey. And it's just a shame what they make them do to make a living. But what they don't see is how that's affecting the entire population. Sometimes it angers so much, but I know I can't necessarily change the entire world, but my job is to change my kids and show mom, dads, and children that there is a different way, that they have to pay it now. You know, they have to work on their health now so that their later years are healthy. And it's unfortunate that statistics show that, you know, our children may not live as long as we live, you know, in next generation. So that's kind of my main goal. I think insulin resistance and the sugar to do with the children and adults right now is so huge that I'm incredibly excited to take this program forward. It's such a great model to have, to just follow it step by step. So my goal and ambition, my practice a year from now, is to be there for people that take that one-on-one, but to really hold groups, whether they're groups that we go forward with in my office and we meet once a week, or that we do actually see them online. I'm much more challenged than Dr. Reed Marie with the whole web thing. I hope that we need a class like that.
And that one's planned, by the way. So yes, I plan to do a little seminar on how to do this on the web. Yeah.
That's probably where my biggest fear comes in, is doing that. But that's really my goal. I mean, it's such an integral part of people getting better, and it's such a great place for just getting their blood sugar balanced, no matter who they are. Just lays the foundation, the groundwork for any other work that we could do.
Yeah.
So I'm so thrilled to have it, you know, just step by step. It's just a matter of putting it out there now.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing. And what I would like all of us to do is just hold that vision for Tammy and see Tammy doing this with her patients in her practice. So she's already got the practice going, and it's just for her taking it to the next level and the next level, and sharing the vision that I have, which is to really make this world a better place so that our children are safe. We are safe. We are not only safe, but we're thriving. And so we share that with you, and just take a breath and hold that vision for Tammy. And later when you do this and your partner shares, this is what you can do for each other, is to share and hold that vision for each other. So thank you for sharing, Tammy. That was awesome. I'm going to put Darlene on now. Hi, Darlene.
Hi, Dr. Rita Marie.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm a little frustrated right now and a little stressed out because I've been working up like for an hour trying to get my Google to work, and so I have no video or anything that I can look at. So I didn't know if you had questions, the questions that you asked right now, if you had them written down.
Yes, I do, and I'll read them to you, but I'm also going to share with you how you can get there. It's very easy to see this. You just need to go to www.meetwithdrritamarie.com. And I'm going to put that on the dashboard as well, in case you're on the dashboard. Okay?
Okay.
And so I've got you here now, and I'm just going to read the questions to you. And we'll just go through them sequentially. How's that?
Okay.
Okay, perfect. All right. So your name and where you're from to start.
Okay. Darlene Dolezal, and I'm from Amarillo, Texas.
Great. And what is your background in terms of, I forgot to put that on there, but what kind of a practitioner are you, or where are you in your practice mode?
Okay, I'm just starting out as a health coach, and I've just had some really, really exciting things going on lately. I've done several classes in my community, and everything has been a great success. I have 3 doctors who have been very supportive of me and helping me out to get, to get my message and what I want to do out to other people. So I am thrilled beyond belief. I mean, I just can't believe that everything is just, I feel like my life path is just like falling in place in front of me, and all I have to do is walk there, you know?
Wow.
So, I mean, it's like, I feel like everything is very meant to be. I had a juicing class the other night where I was teaching people to juice and do green smoothies, and trying to explain to them if they started off their morning like that, it would be a great start to their day. And I had almost everybody except 2 in that class say they were buying a juicer and they were going to start juicing and they were going to start doing green smoothies in the morning. So I was
wow.
so excited. But anyway, I just feel like I'm reaching people. I had a woman talk to me that her husband was diabetic, and she wanted me to coach her whole family because her children have high blood pressure and they're insulin resistant. And I just feel like I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. I'm so excited to take this class.
Yeah.
I just love what you do. Dr. Rita Marie, you are amazing.
Thank you.
I'm a Dr. Rita Marie wannabe.
All right. Well, it took me lots of years. I graduated and got into practice back in 1991. So that's 21 years. So it takes going, and you're off to an awesome start. So I'm really excited for you, and I'm also excited for your community to have that available. Especially in Texas, where there's not as much openness about stuff like that as maybe some other
yes.
places. So it's great. And this is my vision, my goal, is to have so many people who are coming through, and where I can shortcut the 21 years of learning down to, maybe 1 year, so that you can really feel confident and get out there. So what do you value most in your life? I'm getting a sense of that by listening to you. In other words, what are you willing to take a stand for?
Well, I was like Tammy. My first thought always is my family is everything to me. But I just feel like I really want to connect with the world. I mean, I really do love all these people out there who value health like I do. And I mean, if you're not healthy, you really don't have much of a life. So I just want to give out that message, and I want to, bring help to more people who don't know how to do it, and I'm willing to take a stand to make that happen.
Fantastic. Thank you. And you've already shared what you're planning to do with the knowledge gained from the program. You've already shared that pretty well, but how do you envision your health practice a year from now?
That's a good question, and I need to create that vision. I honestly, if you would have asked me that a week ago, I would have been thinking that in a year from now I would be doing what I was doing in the last 2 weeks. So, I just kind of feel like everything has gone so fast and been, it just kind of exploded pretty quickly for me. And I need to create a new vision for a year from now.
Yeah, so what I'll task you to do then is to, just as we're going through this, just have that running through your brain, and as when we break out into breakout sessions, you can really expand that and explore that with your partner. Because, whenever we reach a goal, it's not like, oh, good, there, I'm there, right? It's not like that with life. It's not that we're dissatisfied when we reach our goal, but when we reach our goal, it's like, okay, what's next? How can I make this even better? And when it comes quickly, sometimes we're caught off guard and go, oh, well, that was my goal for a year from now. Now I need to really think big. And what I would encourage all of you to do is don't play small, play big. Play big. See that big vision for yourself and see that big vision for the world, because there's 20, I think, five of us on this program, if I'm not mistaken. There's 25 so far. That's 25 people. And if each of us reaches even 20 people in the next year, and that's really conservative, we'll probably reach more like 100 or more people over the next year, whether it be in one-on-one consultations or in talks or in casual conversation at the supermarket. Realistically, we can all reach 100 people and inspire 100 people over the next year. That's 2,500 people. And if each of those people that we inspire then talks to another few people, it just multiplies and it grows. So the impact that we can have one person at a time is huge when we multiply it. So I just encourage you to think big, because you have the world at your hands, and we together have the ability to change the Monsanto mentality and to change those things that are happening by changing people's attitudes and opening up their awareness. So I applaud you. Thank you. I'm so excited for you, Darlene, to have so much opening up for you so quickly. And just keep visioning it, because whatever you vision, you're going to be stepping into.
Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. So I wish we could do this with everybody, but we would be here all day if we did. So that's why we're going to do breakouts later on. The reason that people are skipping is because I have them on microphone and I'm actually transmitting from my speaker on my phone, and it's a little choppy on my phone. So, and I'm going to move quickly through some of these slides, because some of it is content, and you can go back and you can review it, and it's going to take going over and over again. But I just do want to review again, what is insulin resistance, and how do you know if your client has insulin resistance? What are the causes of insulin resistance? The consequences of unmanaged insulin resistance, and they're huge. They're huge. And how we can help people to prevent and also reverse insulin resistance, and then some action steps to get you started, your client started. The biochemistry, we're going to go through this. I have some slides on this. We're really going to cover what's the role of the pancreas, which we know is where insulin is secreted, and another hormone that most people don't know, glucagon. So insulin, when the sugar gets too high, glucagon, when it gets too low. I've got some slides to reinforce that, and then I'm going to share with you how can you explain it in simple language so that your client understands. How's your liver get involved with this, and how sometimes when the liver is overburdened and too toxic, it can affect your blood sugars, the effects of stress, and the effects of diet. All right. So normal, this is a review for everyone. This slide I have in the Before Be Gone program. You can make a variation of this. And what I recommend is you start to take things and put them in your own words. So if you were to either, you know, on the computer or even in front of people, just draw this out for people. I find that extremely effective. Just take a blank piece of paper and then just show them what's happening, what should be happening, and what you think is happening for them. And people get that, and they can walk away with this piece of paper. I've done that a lot, especially with drawing cortisol graphs and things like that. What's supposed to happen? You eat a meal, which causes glucose and amino acids, one or the other or both, usually both, because most foods are a combination, to enter your bloodstream. Your pancreas detects that. It secretes insulin so that you can get those nutrients and glucose into the cells. The glucose receptors in your cell membranes open up. They say, hey, gotcha, the channels, the little channels that open up. And the glucose, the amino acids, the fats, magnesium, other nutrients all just happily go into your cells, your muscle cells, your liver cells, your skin cells, all your cells, wherever your bloodstream happens to meet up with, which is your entire body, as the bloodstream, the blood vessels course through your entire body. That causes the glucose to be cleared from the blood. The glucose gets right back down to a normal level. Leptin levels rise as a result of the fat cells picking up this glucose. And it says, hey, okay, we're full. We're full, we're done. And now we could just start burning our fat. No need to eat anymore. And then the appetite gets turned off. And then your pancreas stops secreting insulin because everything's okay. And you get an increase in energy because the glucose is then converted to ATP in your muscles, in your organs, and throughout your entire body, in your brain, and throughout your entire body. So let's talk briefly about the brain, because the old thinking was that our brain doesn't need insulin. And if you have some really savvy people, they're going to say, well, why do I get brain fog if I have insulin resistance? It doesn't make sense because my brain doesn't need insulin. My brain can just pick up the glucose directly from the bloodstream. And that's what we used to think up until several years ago. And then some recent studies have shown that, no, the new thinking is insulin plays a very significant role in your brain. And there are certain parts of your brain that, yes, can pick up the glucose without having insulin, but there are other places where there are high concentrations of insulin receptors. And one is the hypothalamus, which is your control center, controls your appetite, controls your temperature, controls your blood pressure, controls your sex drive, controls pretty much everything. Your cerebellum, which controls balance. And one of the things we see when people get blood sugar imbalances is that they're wobbly, they're dizzy, they're woozy. Cerebellum's involved in balance. And then your cerebral cortex. Good old brain fog, right? Your cerebral cortex is the high-level thinking function part of your brain. And if you think about it, you explain that to people. I like to talk about it as the wizard brain. The wizard brain doesn't do very well when it doesn't get fed with sugar. And then we can also talk about how stress affects that as well. So let's talk a little bit about glucagon. You don't hear about this very much. It's not in the popular press. We don't hear about glucagon resistance. We hear about insulin resistance. But glucagon is the kind of sibling to insulin that's also secreted by the pancreas, but it has the opposite effect. When the blood glucose levels drop, it raises your blood sugar. And the way it does that is by going out to your liver and doing a process called gluconeogenesis. It does lipolysis, which means goes to the fat cells and tells them to give me some fat, give me some glucose. You know, let's turn you over, change you back into glucose where you started from in the first place. What triggers glucagon is when your pancreas perceives that decrease in the glucose. There's a set point. And when your glucose goes below that set point, glucagon comes into play to very easily and behind the scenes and discreetly create new forms of glucose. And so if you've ever gone, if you're really normal functioning, you can go a really long time without eating and maintain a steady blood glucose. It might get a little bit lower than your normal baseline, but your body won't let it go below a certain point if everything's working normally. So I can go 8 or 10 hours without eating, and my blood glucose never gets out of the 70s. And I've fasted, and I've never taken my blood sugar when I fasted, but after a few days of adaptation, my blood sugar levels are fine. How do I know that? Because I'm not hungry anymore, I'm not dizzy, I'm not woozy, I'm thinking clearly. And some of you who have fasted for any extended period of time sometimes find that you even think more clearly when you're fasting. So more of a sign that your glucose is at a good level. Okay. Another thing that can increase another thing that can increase secretion of glucagon is stress. So when you're under stress, your body uses multiple forms to get new glucose into the system to try to run away. So one of those is glucagon, another one is adrenaline, and another one is cortisol. In stress situation, you'll get all three. In your normal physiologic function, it's pretty much the glucagon that's keeping you steady. When you have increased plasma amino acids, means protein breakdown gets into your bloodstream, if you eat an all-protein meal and no carbohydrates, then glucagon is secreted to help you break down some of your fat stores and liver glycogen to keep your blood sugar steady. Because if there was no source of glucose in that meal. So a lot of people will say to me, well, I don't understand. How can I go 4 or 5 hours? Doesn't my body need to have glucose? Where is it going to get that from? Or if I eat a low carbohydrate meal, I'm going to feel bad because I don't have enough glucose. But in reality, if everything was working properly, you would be breaking down some of your stored glycogen or fat in order to make new glucose and keep it steady. If you cannot go long periods of time without eating, it indicates that this process is disrupted. And so sharing that with people when they say, well, you know, I keep my blood sugar steady, I eat every 2 hours, and that's the conventional wisdom. But that's just masking a problem. That's just giving you the external fuel. And it creates other problems, right? You get into the point where you can't drop weight because you are always in an insulin state. And insulin suppresses lipolysis, breakdown of fat. Whereas glucagon helps you break down your fat, along with adrenaline and leptin and growth hormone. They all have a role in helping you to break down fat. So you want to go multiple hours in between meals. When you hit the 2 to 3 hour point after a meal, that's when your insulin levels should be dropping, your glucose levels should be dropping. That's when you get into the best, that's the juice of it. So if you're working with somebody who wants to drop weight, you really want to help them to see that you need to get this normalized so that you allow glucagon and growth hormone and leptin to do their things and help you to burn that fat. Otherwise, you're just constantly storing it and your metabolism slows down and you can be eating 800 calories and still not losing weight. And I hear that every day, all the time, until people learn these techniques. So inhibition of glucagon is triggered by insulin. So if you've got glucagon secretion happening and then you eat and insulin goes up, the glucagon naturally goes down because you don't want to be having fatty acids and sugars from the outside talking to you. Michaeline just sent a note that says she's in the hospital, broke her leg and have to go to physical therapy. Yuck. And you're still listening. That's pretty amazing, Michaeline. I'm so impressed. And sorry about that. Okay. So getting back to the inhibition of glucagon is insulin, right? If you have a meal, you want to have that shut off. So you can't have the both of them happening at the same time. When you have free fatty acids and keto acids into the blood, meaning that when your body's starting to release some of the stored triglycerides and break it down into fatty acids and glycerol so that you can burn it, that will inhibit the glucagon because, well, there's enough fuel, right? And then increase urea production actually does that as well. All these things trigger your body to say, okay, no more glucagon. We have enough glucose coming in. We don't have to continue to break down our body to cause more of it. And as I said earlier, glucagon mainly works on your liver and your fat cells to trigger lipolysis, breakdown of fat, and gluconeogenesis from the liver stores, as opposed to cortisol, which it gets involved with gluconeogenesis, and it prefers working on protein stores, which will basically break down muscle. It's just the way that the mechanisms work in there. And adrenaline, which gets, that's your quick response to stress hormone, but it also is a neurotransmitter that gets secreted at other times, that triggers more of the lipolysis. It goes to the fat cells and causes those to break down. So there's a lot of mechanisms that we have in place to keep our blood sugar from plummeting in between meals. We don't have to constantly be feeding it. And that's a point you need to be getting across to people. Because when they learn that, magical things happen. Yes, there's an adaptation period. And it may take a few days or even up to a week before your body learns to kick that mechanism in. But in the book, Mastering Leptin, which I really enjoy, by Byron Richards, he talks about how when you go a long period of time in between meals, it's like giving your liver an exercise. Exercise, yes. Okay, let go of some of this stored glycogen. It's like exercise for your system. And when you're constantly feeding it, you're basically living in an insulin-dominant world, and that creates insulin resistance. So what's your normal blood sugar regulation in between meals? Well, this is a great thing. Again, you can make your own copy of this sort of a chart, or you can sit down with people and just draw it out for them, whatever you feel most appropriate. And it also depends on the person you're working with. Well, normally in between, the decreased blood glucose triggers the pancreas to secrete glucagon, which triggers lipolysis, fat cell breakdown, and then also glucagon triggers gluconeogenesis, which means the breakdown of stored glycogen, which is basically starch that's stored in the liver, readily available, quick access. Athletes, you'll hear that a lot with athletes. If you're doing a long distance training, they say, oh, you want to do glycogen loading. You want to eat a lot of starch to load that up. In reality, you don't have to eat a lot of starch to load that up. But you do need to not be having a really low carbohydrate diet right before an event, because you need to replenish that. So learning to use the low glycemic starches and the low glycemic fruits can be very valuable before an athletic event. So as a result of glucagon, the blood sugar rises, and if it's really extreme energy demand, like you're running, you're sprinting, you're running a long distance thing, your glucagon is depleted, your glycogen is depleted, and then cortisol and adrenaline get released because it's considered a stress to the system. It's considered just a taxing thing, a taxing demand. So when you over-exercise, when you exercise beyond your body's ability to deal with it, you do get cortisol and adrenaline released. And you just want to make sure that you balance that with the proper amount of exercise for you. And that's a whole nother discussion, which when we talk about adrenals, you'll learn a whole lot more about. So the adrenaline triggers lipolysis, breakdown of fat. The cortisol triggers gluconeogenesis, preferentially towards the breakdown of muscle versus glycogen. And there you have it. That's normal. That's what's supposed to happen. And this is just a little graph, and you can use something like this where you can draw a picture for people. You have low blood glucose and high blood glucose. I'm going to grab my little pen here so you can see it. So there's the high blood glucose, and then there's the low blood glucose. And low blood glucose, they both go to the pancreas. In the low blood glucose stage, the glucagon is secreted by what's called the alpha cells. You know, not everybody really needs to know that, but for you guys, you may, or you may have some really sophisticated clients that you're working with. Causes the liver to release glucose into the blood, and now you have normal blood sugar. On the other hand, insulin, which is secreted by the beta cells, and that causes fat to be fat cells to take glucose from the blood and get your normal blood glucose. Now, when it says fat cells take glucose from the blood, that's in an insulin resistant state, that the only cells that really can take the glucose from the blood with insulin resistance would be the fat cells. But in reality, it's all cells that are going to be taking the glucose from the blood. Your fat cells, your muscle cells, your brain cells, your liver cells. In insulin resistance, it's primarily the fat cells, guys, which is why we get those bellies. So let's just review this quickly. We've talked about a lot of this before. When we have insulin resistance, the insulin doesn't bind properly to the cells because they've been damaged by either too much insulin over a long period of time or from other dietary and lifestyle factors, chemicals, pesticides, caffeine, alcohol, hydrogenated fats, oxidized fats. They damage those cells. The insulin doesn't bind properly. The nutrients don't efficiently get cleared from the blood. Your pancreas just secretes more and more and more and more and more insulin. The levels get really high. They stay high for a long time. And what you get is deficient function in those insulin-resistant cells. Your muscles don't have enough energy to take you around the block. You get exhausted. Your heart doesn't have enough energy, so you may have some issues going on there. Your liver may have not enough energy, and detox might slow down. Your lungs may not get enough energy, and the efficiency of oxygen uptake and CO2 release that happens at the lung margins doesn't happen as well. And on and on and on and on. Thyroid function, constipation may happen because your bowels aren't getting enough energy. You get the point. Insulin resistance causes sluggishness, not just you feeling tired, but your entire body, all your organs and glands get sluggish. And then the big deal, huge deal, which I only became aware of several years ago, was that excess insulin affects certain cells in a different way. There's certain cells that don't become insulin resistant, and those are your fat cells, which means that, woo, they just gobble up what the other cells won't take. They're going feasting. They're just gobbling it up. The other ones that don't become insulin resistant are the linings of your blood vessels, which means that they get exposed to too much insulin, which means they become inflamed. Levels of CRP, C-reactive protein, go up. they become inelastic, the walls of the vessels, and you're much, much more prone to cardiovascular disease and hypertension, which, incidentally, if we look at what are the side effects of long-term insulin resistance and diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure. Another big deal is, we've talked about this before in the Before Begun program, but prolonged depression of growth hormone, because insulin inhibits growth hormone, which means you don't have healing and repair happening, you can't grow lean muscle mass as well, and you have more fat burning. And then prolonged depression of thyroid hormone. And thyroid function, woo, we'll have a whole module on that in the year-long program, how to manage thyroid. When your thyroid is depressed, everything in your body is sluggish. When your thyroid is depressed for a long period of time, you end up with constipation. Are you going to see clients complaining about constipation? Yes. Dry skin, hair falling out. Are you going to see that? Yes. So insulin resistance can lead to prolonged depression of thyroid hormone and hypothyroidism. Huge. So the causes, we've talked about these. Just these are things that you need to go over with people. These are things that are really important. Genetic predisposition. Okay? By the age of 60, 40% of Americans have at least three markers for insulin resistance. 60 to 70% have at least one. It's said that probably up to 75% of people are genetically predisposed. There's maybe 25% of the population that can do everything wrong and still not develop insulin resistance. But it's a smaller percentage. We can have fatty acid deficiency, DHA. That's one of the supplements we put in. Omega-6-3 ratios. This is huge. Even for people who are eating supposedly healthy diets, vegetarians, vegans, raw foodists, too much omega-6 in the way of the omega-6 seeds and the omega-6 nuts and the oils. So that's really important, and it manages to mess up the cell membranes. Deficiencies of certain minerals, especially on a standard diet. So it's really important that you're asking people. When we talk about the programs, we're going to talk about how to assess people and what kind of questions to ask them. But deficiencies of chromium, magnesium, zinc, B vitamins, maybe boron and lithium and other nutrients all cause insulin resistance. Lack of resistance exercise, manual labor, trained muscle mass, because trained muscles take up glucose better. Trained muscles are less insulin resistant, and that's one way of helping to reverse insulin resistance is by training your muscles, which is one of the things we're working with people on. Of course, the standard diet of sugar, processed foods, starches, fruit juices, cola, and the biggie here is starches, because people will think, well, I shouldn't have a problem because I only eat whole grains. I eat whole wheat bread, I eat brown rice. They're still starches, and they still cause major glucose swings if you're amongst those that are genetically predisposed. Stress is huge, and that's one thing you're going to be working with people on. It's not just what they eat, it's not just their exercise, but as we talk about throughout Before Be Gone, is the stress is huge in that it increases the cortisol levels. And then you can barely see that, but inefficient deficient protein or protein malabsorption. I see this is huge. A lot of people get plenty of protein in their diet, but they're still protein deficient in their body, amino acid deficient in their body, because they're not absorbing. Because the lining of your gut becomes damaged by the diet, by the exposures, by the stress. And when you have a damaged gut, and when you have leaky gut, when you have low stomach acid, when you have gastritis or even ulcers, you're not going to absorb your protein very well. And you're going to have signs of protein deficiency. And protein deficiency is really big in insulin resistance, which is why, in spite of the fact that I'm not a big fan of using fractured foods, I like whole foods, we're using protein powders as a therapeutic food in reversing insulin resistance, because we're bypassing that whole malabsorption piece while we're doing things that are helping. And in the gut portion of my program, we'll be talking a lot more about how you can help people to heal their leaky guts. So the results of the prolonged insulin resistance is fat burning doesn't happen, belly fat accumulates, your muscle mass goes down, your blood vessel linings get damaged, you get inflammation, high blood pressure, thick blood, blood that's coated with glucose, glycosylated. When we talk about lab, we'll talk more about that, water retention, and initiation of cancer through oxidative damage. and IGF-1, which is insulin growth factor 1. So these are the things that you'll need to explain to people, and you explain it to them in their language. You explain it to them in ways that they can understand. People get it. Excess belly fat. They get that they want to be in fat burning mode. They get it. And you can take these materials and create your own. And one of the things that I do when I'm working one-on-one with people is I have a little booklet. I'm not working with a PowerPoint presentation when I'm sitting across knee-to-knee with someone. But what I've done is created a little booklets on different health topics that explain it. Just graphically take people through an explanation. So it's really good. So you can go through these materials and pull out, well, what do you want to say? And we'll talk about that when we talk about creating your program. What do you want to say on the first visit with someone? How do you want to get them engaged? How do you want them to get to understand this? And then you can create your own little handout, and you can give it to them as handouts, but walk them through it in your office. One of the things that got me to be doing more of the online programs and group programs is that, well, of course, I found myself saying the same things over and over and over again to people after a while it got boring. Well, if you're new in practice, you need to be doing that. You need to be saying things over and over to people so that it's really imprinted on your brain so you can do that talk in your sleep. So you can do what I can do up here is I can come up here without slides and talk to you for hours about any given topic. Why? Because I sat knee to knee with people explaining to them how fatty acids works and about omega-3s and 6s and about refined foods versus whole foods and the good sources of them and insulin resistance and adrenal fatigue. I can do it in my sleep now, and you'll be able to get there. But the point is, at first, is to create yourself some materials that you can use that are in your words that you can work from. Some of these slides are cryptic, and I just put words so that it reminds me of what I want to say. Others go into more detail. You'll be able to fit what fits your style. Again, reinforcing with people that what we're talking about when we talk insulin resistance is a hormone imbalance. Hormone imbalances are just not related to PMS and hot flashes and grumpiness around your period and excess menstrual bleeding and those sorts of things, decreased sex drive. That's not just where the hormone realm is. In fact, when you balance these hormones, the sex hormones usually go into place on their own. It's out of balance with what I call the survival hormones. And these survival hormones relate to the excess belly fat, which is what many of the people are going to be coming to you for. And for a while, I just fought that. I don't want to deal with weight loss. I don't want to deal with belly fat. What I do is so much more profound. But the truth of the matter is you have to get them to hear you. And they may not hear your message when you're talking, oh, you want to be vibrantly healthy and you want to have energy. No, I want to get rid of this belly fat so I can fit into my clothes. Or no, I want to get rid of the brain fog so I can think more clearly. So you meet them where they're at and you share with them how it's a hormone imbalance. Belly fat, hormone imbalance. You see somebody, you're going to see people walking on the street and you'll know right away they have a hormone imbalance. They have this slender body, athletic legs, and a belly. See this all the time. My son's on swim team. The girl's on the swim team. He's really, really built pecs. And these really nice arms and belly fat. Even the boys, they're beautiful bodies except the belly is hanging over. They're not focusing on that. They've got because they eat the standard American diet. How do I know? Because what they're serving at the concession stand is the Krispy Kremes and the soft drinks and the juices. So you'll start to recognize people. And when somebody walks into your office, they've made an appointment with you or you've met them at one of your talks like Darlene's been doing, or Tammy, you know, if you still have people coming in for adjustments, I think you said you mostly work on nutrition. When they walk in the door, you're looking and going, you have a problem. And it may be a six-year-old kid, and you're able to say, you've got an insulin resistance problem, and we need to fix you now, because you're heading down the road that's not pretty. And you'll learn to recognize that. How about the excess belly fat? And these are some of the hormones. When we did the Module 4, we went into a lot more detail, and depending on how much detail you want to go into with people, you can pick and choose some of those slides that have more detail and formulate your own presentation with people. But use those to really understand it yourself so that you can explain it to people in a way that they're going to get. And so they need to get their insulin and leptin, which most people have never heard of, and most people have heard of thyroid, like it's kitchen table talk these days. Oh, I'm tired, oh, I haven't checked my thyroid. Growth hormone and estrogen are the main ones, but then as we talked about in module 4, there's others. All right, so why is insulin resistance so dangerous? People are going to ask you that. Well, yeah, I have this belly fat, and you know, I had this belly fat for a long time, and I'm just going to let go of my vanity, and who cares, it's too hard. It's dangerous. It's not just too hard. It's dangerous. I believe that this is what killed my parents and my sister and what has the rest of my family on blood pressure medication and all sorts of medication. I'm the oldest sibling. I'm probably the only one that isn't on some kind of medication at this point. And that is going out and running and is in good shape. And I'm the only one. And I'm the oldest. So it has nothing to do with age. And I'm out there determined to defy the genes. My mother died at my age. She was 56 years old. And she just dropped dead suddenly of a heart attack. Yeah, she had 9 kids. And yeah, she had a stressful life. And yeah, she smoked cigarettes. And that was a huge piece of it. But it's a deadly combination to eat sugar and drink wine, which she did a lot of, and have insulin resistance going on, and then on top of it to smoke. So it makes those other risk factors way worse. She may have lived a little bit longer. Maybe the cigarettes wouldn't have killed her quite so quickly had she been addressing this, but she had stiff arteries, I'm sure. She had thick blood, I'm sure. She had a higher glycosylated hemoglobin, which we'll talk about later. Yeah, my dad too, 62. My parents were the age of my husband and I right now when they died. And let me tell you, I thought of them as old people for many years before they died. And when I look at what they were doing and how their lives were limited because of their physical limitations, and my mother wasn't extremely physically limited, but you know, she'd have to take a nap after she went gardening. I don't. And I've got the same genetics. I've got both of their genetics. I'm defying it. How? The stuff we're teaching you here. And this is really critical. Why was I so adamant about being really specific, really strict, when I discovered that I obviously have the genetics for it, but that I was expressing some of this insulin resistance when my blood sugars were going up too high after eating fruit? I'm adamant that I don't want to go there. I'll give up fruit. I haven't eaten mangoes in months. I love mangoes. Although I did sneak one in, and when I ate it on a bed of lettuce, it worked just fine. But I didn't want to go there. I don't want my sugar spiking. I don't want my insulin spiking. I want to get this under control because I know what those genetics are. So what are the negative effects of insulin resistance? Well, we talked about the insulin-resistant cells have a problem. The excess anabolic cells effects, because insulin's anabolic. It will cause increased belly fat around your middle, the oxidation. So you want to go through this with people. Systemic inflammation, hypertension, adverse effects. We've talked about this one before. It's just another way of saying it. I probably should have taken out the extra slide. The consequences in terms of diseases people understand, cardiovascular disease. They know when they have elevated cholesterol. It can cause elevated cholesterol and lower HDL. Everybody knows about good cholesterol. Oh, is your good cholesterol high? It causes it to be lower. It causes your triglycerides to be higher. Right? And it affects coagulation, meaning clotting. Causes high blood pressure, weight loss resistance. Leptin resistance and insulin resistance are kind of paired, and it's a cycle, it's a vicious cycle. Leptin resistance can contribute to insulin resistance can lead to leptin resistance, and what do you get as a result? Weight loss resistance. You go on an 800 calorie a day diet and you don't lose weight. Craziness, isn't it? It affects your liver, impairs detoxification. What happens if you impair detoxification? You don't clean out from the chemicals you're exposed to. More of a chance of all sorts of diseases and disabilities. It can lead to androgen dominance, something called PCOS in females, polycystic ovarian syndrome. And people with PCOS always have insulin resistance. It's just, you know, you look it up in the textbook, PCOS associated with insulin resistance. That's where you develop cysts on your ovaries, or you get impaired reproductive function and a whole host of other issues. It affects your glutathione. It causes a reduction in glutathione and phase 2 liver detoxification. Again, this is how it affects detoxification. And then it's been associated with these particular cancers, but it can be associated with just about any pancreatic, colon, and breast cancer. So when I say to you, and you say to your clients, I want you to keep your blood sugars down below 110, at least for 30 days, so that we can reset these receptors. We're talking big business here, and you can use these things as leverage. When you'll talk about this when we do our little how to put together your own program, but you want to find out more about their basic history. So you can use a lot of these talking points, especially when you're working one-on-one. Some of this you're going to avoid, you're not going to say at all. You're going to really hit them with what's really valuable for them. In doing a group program, I have to share it all. But you can really hone it in. You can look at the family history. You can look at the fact that mom died at 56 and dad died at 62 to encourage that person to say, you need to take a look at this. And these are the things that we're doing throughout the program. I'm just listing it here. The burst training, the DHA, the improving the omega-3s, the minerals, the B vitamins. You know this if you've been through the Before Be Gone program. If you haven't, this stuff is carried throughout. We'll summarize this later. And you want to share this with people. You want to share with them how to avoid trans fats and what that means. Let me tell you, I've done that fat conversation with people one-on-one over and over and over again. Omega-3s, omega-6s, inflammation, anti-inflammation. You'll have that conversation, and you'll have it over and over. You'll have it with every person that walks in the door, regardless of whether or not they're insulin resistant, because it's huge. It's huge. Unless you get a very sophisticated clientele like I'm getting now, which are people who are already doing a lot of the things that they think are right. They're avoiding trans fats, they're off the margarine, mayonnaise, etc., and they're still having problems. And that's where you really get to dig. Okay, so next, I wanted to put this is a study. You guys can look up the study if you're interested, but people always ask, well, why do you do, what does gluten have to do with insulin resistance? In addition to the fact that any allergen causes inflammation, gluten seems to have more of an issue because it actually can create type 1 diabetes by autoimmune attack on the pancreas. And there's studies that point that out, and that diabetes can be associated with antibodies to wheat protein and also to dairy protein. So if you've got anybody with this insulin resistance issue, you need to be getting them off of gluten. Down the road, if they want to go back on it, make sure that you get them tested, and we'll have a whole nother course on how to do that. And you can listen to my interview with Dr. Tom O'Brien. We're actually on next week's module. We're actually loading up a transcript of that conversation that I had with him, so you can really use some of the information that he used to motivate your people. And you can go to his website too. I think it's thedoctor.com, and he has some DVDs. He has the patient DVDs, and he has the practitioner DVDs. So I would order both and really immerse yourself in that, so when you're talking to people about going gluten-free, you can explain it from a place of science. So leptin has a huge role in insulin resistance. And if you want to simply talk to people about leptin, leptin's that hormone that's secreted by your fat cells. And the first thing they're going to say is, but I have plenty of fat cells. Why am I not secreting enough leptin to turn off my appetite? Why? That has to do with leptin resistance. So when your fat cells fill with fat, releases leptin, your hypothalamus says, whoops, we have plenty of food, turn off the appetite, let's burn what we already have. Upregulate fat burning, turn off fat storage, make you not hungry anymore. However, most of the time we end up with resistance to our leptin. Why? Because we've produced so darn much of it from overeating for so long. Why? Because we have damaged our insulin receptors and we're not getting the right signaling between insulin and leptin. Why? All the reasons we talked about for insulin resistance apply to leptin resistance. Okay. So what you want to basically boil down to people is you've got a gas gauge in your body. And when the needle on the gas gauge goes to empty, you get hungry. Your body says, oh, we need food. When you eat, the gas gauge is supposed to move up to full, and your appetite gets turned off. You basically say, well, we have plenty of fuel we can burn in our body. We don't need to take it in. and your appetite goes away. But with leptin resistance, think about it as the gas gauge is permanently set to empty. You fill the tank, but it still reads empty. Have you ever had that happen in your car? I've had that happen on my car. But the thing about the car is it self-regulates. If it's empty and you go to stick gas in there, it overflows. And the same thing does happen to us in our body, but we don't see it, right? We don't have that external manifestation of it. Well, we see it long-term. We see our fat cells getting bigger and bigger. But the gas gauge is permanently set at empty. What we want to do is trigger that to be put back on full. And I want to share one new thing that I've just discovered recently in doing a lot of research on this. And I'll share it with people on Before Be Gone next Tuesday, so you get an advance. But there's this African mango seed, and they've been powdering it now. These African tribes have been using it as food forever. But what it does, I can't remember the exact name of the herb, but it's this long, hard to pronounce word. You can buy it as a powder in a bag. And you can actually add it to smoothies and stuff. So it's African mango seed powder, and I found it at znaturalfoods.com. And I'll put the links up. It'll be added to the resource guide. Phenomenal stuff. I've looked it over and over. I thought, oh, it's just the latest fad. It's, just a fad supplement. But no, it's not just a fad supplement. There's lots of studies that show that this stuff actually helps to repair the receptors for leptin. And reverses leptin resistance. It makes you feel full, so it's a good thing to take about a half an hour before you eat, and it causes you to not have those cravings for everything you want after dinner, which is the worst time. Clear sign of leptin resistance. If you want to know if your person is leptin resistant, you say, if you've eaten a really big meal at night, do you just really feel hungry an hour later that you just have to snack? Or maybe you still feel full, but you have this uncanny desire to eat? That's leptin resistance. Look in the mirror, you're overweight, you probably have leptin resistance. Okay, so cool, just check it out. I don't have any stock in it, I don't have an affiliate link, but go and check out this African mango seed powder. It may be a really big clue to help people to get through those early stages as they're resetting things through the lifestyle. Again, the things that influence insulin resistance. Can't say this enough. Take this slide, omega-3 fats, elevated omega-3 to 6, trans fats, deficiencies of minerals, high glycemic meals, insufficient protein. I had another slide like this earlier. Use this, create your own, and really talk about people and really hone in on which are the areas that they are most likely to have a problem. This is our 5-step program that we've been working on. When you present this, you may not describe it this way. You may describe it a little bit differently. And actually, in my sample, if you download the handout that's the template for creating your own program, which we'll go over this afternoon, I give you a different way, a 7-step program. Speak them in language that people are going to understand. I tend to have a really sophisticated audience of people who have been trying all this other stuff and really want to get to the heart of it. Still, I could do better, and I will in the future, in naming these steps. But this is basically the steps I take people through. What are the steps that you're going to take people through? Yeah, they're going to be similar. Yeah, they're going to include the same things that I include, because naturally we have to, because that's what we need to do. But you can name them sexy things. You can name them what you think your audience will relate to and get. Oh yeah, I can't wait to do that step, right? So that's what this is. So basically, you need to increase the sensitivity of your insulin cells. You need, of your insulin receptors. You need to decrease the requirement for insulin. And actually, we reversed this in the program. We went on the supplements first we did this the same, sorry. I'm getting myself a little messed up. You need to first increase the insulin sensitivity. That's where the supplements and some of the extra herbs and things help, because then you no longer have so many cravings. Then you need to decrease the requirement by changing the diet, get off the sugar, get on the whole foods. Then you need to reduce the impact of autoantibodies, which means get off of gluten, get off of dairy, get off of any foods that you might be allergic to. Optimize your growth hormone. How do you do that? By optimizing sleep, by doing burst training, by doing all those sorts of things. and then minimize the impact of cortisol. How do you do that? By taking mini vacations, by breathing and relaxing, by learning some of the heart math techniques, or meditating, or doing yoga, whatever it is that works for you. Having fun. And let me make sure that when you design your programs for people that you really stress the importance of having fun every day, because it's super important. It's so important that in Module 3, I have a whole handout, a whole multi-page document on getting in touch with what's fun for you and incorporating fun on a daily basis. And people like that. You know, it's not all about hard work. It's not all about what they can't do. It's about what they can do as well. So then, this is just an overview. You can create your own overview for people. But really critical, I think, is starting the day with greens and optional protein powder within an hour of waking up. The more we move through this, the more I'm seeing it's not so optional, really. The protein early in the day really makes a difference. And some people can do it with the greens, like they're willing to juice a couple pounds of greens into a quart of juice and drink that. That has a lot of protein. A pound of a mango, I'm dreaming about mangoes. A pound of kale has about 13 to 15 grams of protein, right? Some of your other foods have very high levels. I don't have them all memorized, but you can look them up in charts. So you can show people how certain recipes can get them there if they don't want to use the protein powder for whatever reason. But the easiest thing for people who are in a hurry is they're not going to spend an hour juicing and cleaning up the juicer, but they will throw some protein powder and green powder in a jar, shake it up, and go to work, or take that all to work and go. So it's working within the person's lifestyle and finding out what is their schedule. Are you busy in the morning? Do you have the time to do this? And what do you have time to do? And working within that. If you give somebody something that's too hard, too time consuming, then it's not going to work, even if it's the optimal plan. So the optimal plan is the one that they will do. You know, and then just listing here on this slide is the blueberries and cinnamon and coconut. You can have that as a porridge afterwards. You want to make sure you get to bed by 11, preferably 10 or 10:30. Sleep 7 to 9 hours a night, maybe even longer. Do sleep vacations, all the things we went over in the sleep module. Walking and low intensity aerobics combined with burst training and resistance training. This week's module 5, a couple of days ago, there was a new PDF file that came out that went through why is burst training really so important, gave you some references that you can go look at if you want more details. So really helping you to reinforce with people, you know what, doing 30 seconds to a minute of exercise multiple times a day makes a huge difference. And let me tell you a quick story. For those of you who were on the call last Tuesday, you might have heard Virginia get on and say, you know, she was frustrated because her first morning sugars had been like 103, 101, 103. She could never get them down. Every now and then they'll be in the 90s, but most of the time it's at in the low 100s. She doesn't know what to do. And then her last sugar at night is the same, so it's not like she's having crazy blood sugar swings in the middle of the night. What should she do? I said, are you doing the resistance training an hour before bed? The burst training. 2 minutes of burst training an hour before bed. She goes, no, but you know what? I like to wind down. I don't like to exercise it that night. I said, can you do it for 2 minutes? She said, okay, I'll do it. I'm going to do it for 10 minutes. Well, she wrote me back to say that by the next morning, her blood sugar was 90. It was 90. No, it was 87. It was 90 when she went to bed that night. It was 87 the next morning. She just wrote me again this morning. It's been maintaining. Her blood sugars are now in the 80s. She's going to bed with them in the 80s. And she's waking up with them in the 80s. Just by adding 2 minutes of burst, actually she might be doing 10, but at the end of the day, an hour before bed or 2 hours before bed. So as long as it's 2 hours after your meal and an hour before bed, however you can fit it in, do it. Do it. Run up and down your stairs for 2 minutes. Jumping jacks, squats at your desk. Important, important, important. Another thing we haven't really been reinforcing so much, but cleansing days are really valuable. We talk about that in the menu plan, but you may be working with somebody and say, you know what, let's just take a cleansing day where you're just drinking liquids. No fruits, just vegetable juices, green smoothies, maybe some nut milks, and just drinking so that you take some load off your digestive tract and then the stress management. So these are the things that you can incorporate into your program as you're working with people. You don't have to have 500 pages of recipes to give them. You don't have to have, you know, 400 pages of technical information and references, unless you're working with a very sophisticated crowd. You just need to give them what they need to do. You need to explain enough of the underlying biochemistry so that they get it and they're willing to follow through. I've had so many people tell me over the years, you know, you're the first person that ever really explained this to me. Now that you've explained it to me and I understand, it's hard to go back. I had one woman who went through the year and had lost, I don't know, 60 pounds or something, working with me on a group program. She went down to 123 pounds from 190 pounds. She said, "You ruined Cheetos for me. Now that I know what they do in my body, I just envision all my cell membranes getting clogged and inflamed, and I can't eat Cheetos anymore." Great. This is what we want. You want your patients and clients to say to you, "You ruined ice cream for me." And you go, "Celebrate. Yay." That's what we want, because it's a paradigm shift. And that's what we're looking for. For long-term change, we want to see a paradigm shift. And these are just more of our rules. Make sure they're strict for at least 2 weeks. You may take 2 weeks, 3 weeks to get them even there. You may take 2 weeks to get them off of sugar by substituting things, by getting them to use stevia or xylitol or erythritol. Write that down, erythritol. There's an organic erythritol supplement called Zero, Z-E-R-O, and it's white crystalline powder. It's scary, but it's a great transition. And it's a great way, even not as a transition, to have an occasional treat that doesn't have that stevia aftertaste. And it's a little bit better on your digestive tract than xylitol and sorbitol, forget. Just, you know, get people off of that. And that other stuff, Splenda, not that stuff. Not artificial sweeteners, but some of the healthier sweeteners that are derived from whole foods. Get them off the grains. People will bargain with me. Well, what if I just eat this? Okay, you transition them there. But once you get them to the point of being strict, they need to be strict for at least 2 weeks, if not three or four. And I'm finding with most people, because it's long-standing insulin resistance, that it takes longer. But you will be able to add some of these foods back, the ones that are healthy. Some people, if it's been a long time, may not be able to go back to potatoes. Bananas, mangoes, those are high sugar fruits. You may always have to eat those with greens, with lettuce, and maybe not blended. I found that I could go back and eat mango as long as I eat it whole, the chunks of mango chewed with whole chunks of lettuce, because it's a slower absorption, but when I blend it into a smoothie, it goes in too fast and it raises my sugar. You're just going to learn, and you're going to teach people, and you're going to adapt to everything that they're doing. They're going to feed you back. And when we design the program, you'll see that we want to have that kind of feedback loop built into a program. You know, and the dried fruit, the fruit juice, the heated oils. Some of these things are forever stay away from, and some of these things are while we're resetting. And on our next module, within Before Be Gone, in the Stepping Into Your Future, I really help you to understand which of these things that you should stay away from, and you should be getting your clients to stay away from permanently, and which of the things you can phase back in and test. Testing is real important, and you're going to have people ask you, can I have sweet potatoes? What about this food? What about that food? And my answer is always test. You've got this amazing thing we're going to talk about in the next section. This amazing little glucose meter, this amazing object that costs between $10 and $20, gives you a world of information, a glimpse, a snapshot into your own body. Use it. It's cheap, it's easy. Yeah, the strips cost, but you can get them down to like 25 to 50 cents a piece. Wow, where else can you get that kind of information? If you tested every single time that I've recommended for a few meals, four times in the first hour and then once every hour, maybe you're using 10 or 15 strips. Maybe it's costing you $7 or $8. What blood tests can you go and do for $7 or $8 that give you as much information as that? And as the program progresses, they don't need to be testing as much, but help them to see the importance of testing at the beginning, and we'll talk about that when we get to the next section. Okay? The replenishing the nutrients. the big difference between what I'm teaching you and most of the insulin resistance information that's out there, the various books there are, I have them all, is the diet is so critically important. What the other books and the other teachers are saying is the real important thing is staying on low glycemic foods, staying away from the carbohydrates. They don't talk about getting quality foods. So you might see bacon and eggs for breakfast, steak and eggs for breakfast. There's no greens in their meal. It's just pure protein. I don't want you starting the day with pure protein. I want you to get the protein from the green leafies and really reinforcing with your people the importance of this. Some of these people that you're seeing are going to come right from mainstream, and their green leafy vegetables is a piece of lettuce on their hamburger every day. It's really introducing them, and like Darlene said earlier, she taught this juicing class. She got people who didn't know anything about greens. They were going to go buy a juicer because they realized how important it was and how good it could taste. A blender, a juicer, blending them, juicing them, learning how to make amazing salads. If you have a good dressing, you'll eat a lot of salad. And in the Before Be Gone program recipe guide, we have tons of those. You may have your own recipes. If you do, put them together. Give them a little handout, even if it's just pieces of paper with the recipes printed on it. Handwritten and photocopied is fine. Don't let your lack of sophistication with the media and the tools keep you back. You can teach them. You find a new way to do something that causes you to love sea vegetables when you hated them before, teach it to people. Give it to people. For many years, that's what I did. I create recipes and I just typed them up on the computer and I printed them out and I hand them to people. And after a while, people kept saying, but I don't know how to do it. You know, you give me these recipes, but I just haven't done it. And then I started teaching classes. So that's what Darlene's doing, and I'm sure some of you are doing. It's a wonderful thing to do. Beverly was talking about doing that as well. You get people where their bellies are. You teach them how good the food can taste. And then they go, wow, I don't need the sugar anymore. I have this. I don't need to eat the steak and eggs for breakfast. I can keep my blood sugar steady using greens and chia seeds and sea vegetables. So you're going to be introducing people to this. That's what's going to set you apart from, say, the conventionally trained doctor down the street who's just putting somebody on a low carbohydrate diet and not really focusing on the power of the food. The downside of just doing what these other books are doing is that you're not nourishing the whole rest of the person. And so putting them on steak and eggs and all that kind of stuff may lower their insulin resistance, but it's not going to do very much for their arteries. It's not going to do very much for their joint pains because those foods are very acid forming. And they're very, very much inflammatory. And you can work with people at whatever level they're at. Personally, my chosen diet is vegan, no animal products, and it's also mostly raw, like 100%, 99 to 100% raw, with my cooked vegetables being mostly in winter where I steam vegetables or eat sauteed vegetables, with huge amounts of green leafies that are raw and with sauces that are raw. That's my personal bent. Do you have to be 100% raw to make this program work? No. Do you have to be 100% vegan to make this work? No. That's why for people who aren't, small amount of lean, organic, free-range animal protein or fish. But keeping it to small amounts, because the studies have shown over time that if you keep your animal protein intake to 10% or less, or even 5% or less of your diet, you get all the benefits of a vegetarian, or most of the benefits of a vegetarian diet, and you can still hang on to that little bit of food. So you're going to be teaching people about these foods. You're going to be incorporating this. You can do it one step at a time. Whee! And then there are cornerstone supplements. I believe that, and everybody really needs to start with these supplements, or most people, when they have insulin resistance going on. The chromium does wonders. The only function chromium has is to open up insulin channels. Open up insulin channels. If you've been year after year, or your client has been year after year, eating sugar, eating starches, refined foods, they've depleted their chromium stores because there's just so much chromium in the food they're eating. It goes away and you find that the receptors are resistant. When you throw in the extra chromium, 400 micrograms twice a day as a starter, you get tremendous results. The cravings go down, the sugars start to get into the cells, you start to feel better. These are the supplements that have the most impact: the chromium, the magnesium, and the DHA. Vanadyl sulfate, optional, but I included in the first part of the program because I'm realistic. A lot of people are coming into this program and have done a lot and have maybe taken chromium because they read it was good. Maybe they weren't taking the right amount. Maybe they weren't doing it in context with the rest of the stuff I teach, but they may have been. So I say, well, if this is you, try some vanadyl sulfate for 4 weeks. But don't do it for too long because it can hurt your kidneys. You may not be starting people like on that. You'll judge that from what they're telling you. And if they're telling you that they've done this and they've done that and they've tried all this other stuff before, that may be something that you're going to go into, and also some of the other supplements. And in Module 2, we go into a lot more detail. Go back and review your stuff in there about these different minerals and vitamins, like when you would start to use them. Vitamin C, bowel tolerance is really great because it's anti-inflammatory. It's good for your immune system. The D, you test, you supplement. I have a whole kind of formula that I keep in mind when I'm telling people how much to take. The B complexes, especially if you have adrenal overload, especially if somebody's one of those stress bunnies, they're going to need them. B6, again, the adrenals, but also if they have some more of the female stuff going on, the PMS and the perimenopausal symptoms. Pantothenic acid, again, adrenals, amazing for adrenals, so that's for people who have adrenal problem. Niacin, somebody who already has a cholesterol problem or a lipid problem, then they will, they're going to be a good candidate for the niacin. And then others that are important, potassium, because when we're doing this insulin resistance diet, we're taking away some of the major sources that people have for potassium, which are bananas and potatoes. So really loading up on the broccoli, you're possibly taking a potassium supplement. Some people, when they start to take the magnesium and the chromium, will get muscle cramps. Didn't seem to happen in this program as much as the first program. There were quite a few people who were having muscle cramps as a result. We got them to take some extra potassium, sometimes some extra calcium, and that helped it. And then lipoic acid, very good. Extra support, zinc, and there's a whole bunch more that are talked about in Module 2. Some avocados and broccoli seem to be really good sources of potassium, and we include a lot of that, so do it more. Tammy wanted to know, can we get the formula for how much vitamin D to take? I'll run through that really quickly. I usually, if somebody comes in and their vitamin D level is below 20, which is super low, I'll usually tell them to take 20,000 for about a month. And if they're willing to test it the month, then they see where they're at, and I may continue to have them take the 20,000 because it can take a while for it to go up. But if they're not willing to test it a month, they want to take, you know, stretch their budget and wait to 3 months, then I tell them 20,000 for a month, 10,000 for 2 months, and then absolutely retest. If someone is somewhere, if they're in the range of above 75, which is rare, I never see that until I actually start to implement the supplementation with them, then we want to see, well, how much are you taking now, and is that the right amount? So if they're taking like a certain amount and they have a test and it's between 75 and 100, I'll keep them on that same amount, but I have them retest in 3 months and see if they need to, if it goes up further and it's starting to get into the over 100 range, then we can drop them down a little bit. And then I kind of gauge it in between that. And just depending, I may, if they're between 20 and 30, 20 and 40, I may do 10,000 for a month or up to 3 months. And if they're between 50 and 75, I may have them do about 5,000. So it's all kind of individual based on some of the symptoms that they're showing. So if they're showing, like they have leaky gut symptoms, if they have thyroid stuff going on, if they have thyroid antibodies, I'm going to err on the side of larger amounts, because those people tend to need a lot more. So it's a complicated equation, but that'll give you a general guideline. And when we do the whole year-long program, I'm going to have each nutrient, we'll go through each nutrient and how to determine when to supplement, how to supplement, all that. Okay, well, we're at the end, yay! I think that was the end, the last slide. Sharon wanted to know, how do all these supplements affect pregnancy and breastfeeding? Yeah, you have to be careful that you don't get too high. Some of them will spill into your breast milk. That's another consideration. I would err on the side of low and then see. But the chromium shouldn't be a problem. The magnesium shouldn't be a problem. Vitamin C, you don't want to ever go above 3,000 when you're nursing or pregnant. because you can create a rebound scurvy in your baby if you suddenly stop and they're no longer getting that huge amount. So you'd have to taper off. So there's considerations like that. Your B vitamins in the amounts that I'm talking about, yeah, I wouldn't do the vanadyl sulfate. I would do some more research on the lipoic acid. Zinc is certainly very valuable for pregnancy and nursing. Let me try this one more time. I'm going to take